your babies in the bag down here?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus. Sorry.
Babies in the bag.
Are we doing babies?
No.
Oh, okay.
Don't you get my
okay. Okay, at 6 o'clock, we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. This is July 11th. We're on the Extension Education Committee. We have Supervisors Decker, Spolitsky, and Dodge present. Supervisor Underhill is running late, and then we have both of our Youth and Governance. We have Bianca and Colin. I know I'd catch on to it sooner or later. Okay, so certification of compliance.
We are. The notice was published twice in the Kenosha News on June 28th and July 3rd.
Okay. And UW Extension Orientation Part 2.
Very good. Thank you all. So last month, the educators shared brief overviews of their programs, and so you got a little snapshot of the kinds of programs that they deliver and have responsibility for. Tonight, I'm going to share more about our organizational structure and our specific roles as educators. And I'm also going to rely on my colleagues in the room to share some specific examples throughout the presentation that address and fit in the areas by which our roles are engaged. A couple of pieces I sent you via PDFs. One piece is the background of what would be considered UW Extension, Cooperative Extension's annual report. It's our centennial as this year, as you know. I mentioned that last month. This is just a snapshot of our values as well as some of the programs combined statewide. So not everything in this book is in every county, obviously, and I'll get to that as I talk about how we program. Other pieces that I share are related to some of the charts that I'm going to show, and I just thought it might be nice if you had it ahead of time and had it on your own. Screen. So, there's a phrase that I'm sure you've heard many times here in the state of Wisconsin, and that is the idea of the Wisconsin idea. That phrase was coined with the intent that the boundaries of the university are the boundaries of the state. And Cooperative Extension certainly is probably the best beneficiary, or I should say contributor to that for the beneficiaries of our 72 counties. This really means that the UW serves the needs of the state, and we are Cooperative Extension in all 72 counties. So we embody this in everything that we do every day. Here's one of the visuals that I had sent to you. It, in essence, is our newly designed and accepted, shall I say, UW Extension, Cooperative Extension's purpose, vision, and values. I might just add here, for those of you who knew Annie Jones as our community resource development educator, she's been on a special statewide project leading this process around strategic planning and helping develop this purpose, vision, and values. So Annie's touch is in a lot of this, for those of you who know Annie.
And we might deliver it.
Our purpose is to teach, learn, lead, and serve, connecting people to the University of Wisconsin and engaging them in transforming lives and communities. Our vision is to be a thriving, well-known, and sought-out educational resource that reflects the rich diversity of the state. And our values that we strive to live by are community, discovery, inclusiveness, relationships, and respect. Now, our office, not wanting to learn that entire slide, many years ago, about 4 years ago, I guess, now we decided to try to capitalize on a mission statement that reflected just for Kenosha County, and a statement or a phrase that we could use as our tagline. And we came up with Discover the Resources, which is our, again, being the link to the university. So our mission statement specific to Kenosha County is bringing university resources and knowledge to build capacity of individuals, groups, and communities. So in discovering the resources, that connection to the university, I'm going to give you a little UW lesson here. This is UW 101. You're certainly familiar with the UW system, that at the top of their org chart is the UW-Wisconsin Board of Regents. And the system itself is comprised of, if you look at just the two at the bottom here, the thought my laser pointer would work, but it doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. On the left, the doctoral. Thank you, Erin. Excellent. Way over there. UW-Madison, UW-Milwaukee are the two institutions, the four-year campuses that grant doctoral degrees, while the other 11 do not. They just grant four-year degrees. So that would be UW-Platteville, Parkside, Stout, Stevens Point, Eau Claire, River Falls, yada, yada, yada. I'm not going to try to name all 11. The point here is that there are 13 four-year campuses that grant degrees. The third box of the UW system are the 13 two-year colleges. They've been referred to as freshman and sophomore colleges, but they now actually are referred to as UW colleges. The next box is us, UW Extension. Okay, so that's where we fall. And how do we fall?
Teddy, those freshman sophomore colleges, is that like WCTC?
No, that's the technical colleges.
Okay.
The closest one to us would be UW-Waukesha,
okay.
UW-Rock County,
okay.
UW-Baraboo, UW-Fond du Lac, UW-Washington County. Hmm. Yeah, those are UW. The WCTCs are the technical college system, so that's like Gateway.
Okay.
The larger structure of which we are a part of this UW Extension box, so think of that box that was back on the previous slide. Now we're breaking down the UW Extension box. I'm going to start over here with the box clear on the right and go backwards. This is the Division of Entrepreneurship and Economic Development, known as DEED. Extension and UW love acronyms. Everything is an acronym. And in that box, you're going to find the Small Business Development Centers on each of the 13 campuses. The next box is Continuing Education Outreach and E-Learning, and they too are on all the campuses. So at UW Parkside here in Kenosha County, we have colleagues that work in Outreach and E-Learning and at the Small Business Development Center who are, I like to say, cousins on the family tree because they also work as part of UW Extension. The one least known about us, I believe, by the general public is this box called BAMI. Broadcasting and Media Innovations. That's where Wisconsin Public Television and Wisconsin Public Radio is housed. And so if you've ever been a listener of WHAD, when you hear them describe their commercial, they'll say something to the effect of, with a license from the Broadcasting and UW Extension. So they are, again, our cousins on the family tree. We are this box over here known as Cooperative Extension. So when our name is completely spoken or written, you're going to see that confusing, why do you say Extension twice? Here's the answer. We are UW Extension because we're over here in this box, okay? So we're UW Extension, Cooperative Extension. They're UW Extension, Broadcasting and Media Innovations, UW Extension, Continuing Ed, you get the picture. So we technically should always say UW Extension, Cooperative Extension to distinguish what branch of the tree we're from. However, being that we are one of the part of Cooperative Extension that's connected to the counties, you're going to always see us say Kenosha County, UW Extension, to distinguish our connection to our funding partner of Kenosha County. So in the box are all the program areas that we talked about last month where the educators spoke about their specific areas. The two that we didn't talk about is the Geological and Natural History Survey and Leadership Wisconsin, and those two programs are statewide. They're housed out of Madison. They're not in a county extension office. Okay, everybody with me? Okay, so I've mentioned the funding partnership. The word cooperative comes from the essence of our funding between three levels of government. The county, the state, which happens to be the UW system, and our federal partner, USDA. So that's where cooperative comes from. It's that cooperative relationship of three levels of government. Administratively, we're divided into regions across the state, and Kenosha County is part of the East Metro region, which means we stretch all the way from Kenosha up to Marinette. All those counties are part of the East Metro region. And we have a brand new regional director, Gerald Carruthers. Here is the statewide cooperative extension budget from fiscal year 2012. Now, we're on a state fiscal year with cooperative extension, so that's July 1, 2011 through just the end of June 30th, just passed. The majority of the funds are state funds, as you can see, about 40%. 25% of the funds come from the counties, the county contributions. Our federal allocation out of the federal budget is through the Smith-Lever funds from USDA. Then there are other federal funds that are received for various programs such as basin educator programs, some of the water quality, household hazardous waste, pollution prevention. A lot of those are federally funded specific. And then the private funds are simply, I should add nutrition education to some of this other federal funds as well. And then other private funds are grants and gifts and fees that are collected. So talking about the funding of this relationship in our county extension offices between the UW Extension partner and our county, here's the important part I want you to see, is that all of our educators' salaries are split 60-40. So the county contributes 40% of the salary and benefits while the university puts in 60. The county provides the office facilities, office support staff, funding for our mileage, capital equipment, including technology, professional development support, and postage for large bulk mailings. The state's providing that 60% of salary and benefits, technology services including training and support. They don't provide the hardware, they just provide the support and training. Campus, we have access to the campus-based specialists on all 13 campuses if we have paid, if UW Extension has a contract with some of those specialists who have what they're called joint appointments. We certainly have access to all the UW system regardless, but some of those specialists are specifically tied to UW Extension. They pay for some selected trainings and administrative meetings that we attend statewide or regionally. They do contribute to our professional development. They provide the majority of all of our postage, our day-to-day postage allocation. They provide employee assistance to us as colleagues within the system. They're the ones who provide all the support for hiring, recruitment, and all of our HR support for colleague orientation, all the aspects of our work world. Our budget office provides support for contracts and grants coordination, and we have a publications unit, news releases, videos, software, those kinds of things all come from UW Extension.
So, you have hiring and recruitment services, so that's not through the county?
Correct.
So when you're posting for a nutrition educator, that's through UW?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. All done through UW. All the costs associated with that, the interviewing, the policies, the procedures, because they're all state employees.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Good question. Good question. Okay, now the good stuff. What do we do? What do these folks do? You heard about their programs. So I'm going to divide the roles that we hold as educators in cooperative extension and pull out pieces, and I'm going to look to my colleagues and ask them to share with all of us specific examples of how we do each of these roles. Teaching, first and foremost, I can't emphasize enough that even though our mission statement sounded a little convoluted, it's all about education. We are educators first. That's the filter that we use for everything that we do, is are we educating? What information and resources are we imparting to help others do better, learn more, improve? It's all about teaching. And so we're going to do that in a variety of ways. We're going to do that through presentations, workshops, conferences that we teach at, or conferences that we actually offer. We're going to do that one-on-one. One-on-one. The phone rings off the hook this time of the year for specific questions around... I looked at horticulture.
Horticulture.
That education is all one-on-one.
Some people walk in the office too.
That's all one-on-one education. Okay. We use media. Three of them, Kristen, Barb, Rose, four of them, and John have articles in the Kenosha News. They're on the radio. They're on television. In fact, I think they've been getting calls this week because of the drought. Mm-hmm. Right? Lots of calls getting for media contacts, I heard.
Yes, Rose did an interview on WLIP this week.
on drought and the effect on farmers and also local. I've done a number of interviews with the Kenosha News on drought kinds of things too. So that's the big news this week.
The photos show Bethany teaching a workshop for babysitting training, doing the American Red Cross babysitting training. So we can see the girls here are learning how to put like a splint on, I think, or
yes, they're learning how to bandage each other's arms for cuts and wounds and burns and things on that picture.
And Barb, talk a bit about this photo. This is the landscape grounds maintenance.
So this landscaping and grounds maintenance short course, which is given every winter in February, half day for 4 weeks in a row. And when we talk later about accessing our specialists, we do work with specialists and also professional. It's for professional landscapers, grounds maintenance people, arborists, all of those kinds of people that come to this. We keep the cost very low so that they can all come. We work with the local Landscape Contractors Association in helping decide what to do, and then they've also been offering donuts for our attendees. They love donuts. The other thing, and it's hard to see because it's not dark enough, is 2 years ago we started offering, actually 2 years ago we started offering and having people take advantage of it, simultaneous Spanish translation. So we do have translators that come in and interpret for Spanish speakers so that they can understand and learn all that information too. So.
Another way that we are providing our education is, as I mentioned through the media, this last summer, 2011, Barb was asked by the Kenosha News to do podcasts. So they're still archived right here on
the Today we're going to talk about insects and diseases in the vegetable garden, but what we're really going to talk about is how to find them and what to do with them when you find them. I'm Barb Larson, and I'm the horticulture educator for the Kenosha County UW Extension Office, and I'm again in the Living Life Co-op garden, and they are sharing our garden with us and also going to share a few of their problems with us today too.
Okay.
So right now I'm in front of some like broccoli, lettuce,
so
cauliflower, and one
really
of the things that I do
you go to the Kenosha News and it's under the life section. And there's four of them. So there's one for basically all the way through the growing season on vegetables and how to plant them, how to take care of them, common insects and disease problems, and then harvesting and fall garden planting for fall.
One of the newer areas that we're just starting to get our arms around is the social media. And
Both Rose and I use it, not extensively yet, but we're using it more and more to educate, both to put up things about different kinds of programs and other things that we're doing. So I did a class last night in the Pleasant Prairie Community Garden. And so we put that on Facebook, but then today I put on a new fact sheet that we have on drought care of lawns. So that just went up on Facebook. It also went up on our website page too, on the Kenosha UWEX.edu website, but it's also on Facebook. And Rose does similar kinds.
So we're educators, and we view the community, the entire county, as our audience. Our classroom is the county. So unlike, I'm trying to make the analogy to the campuses, where someone pays money to go to a course and get a degree, our community is, and classroom is, the entire county. Oops. So were you going to say something, John?
Doing good.
Yeah, it was. Now you scared us. When you offer a particular program and you just don't see it really resonating, how do you kind of figure, okay, well, that didn't really sell well, or what, there's not a lot. I mean, you can keep trying, you can give it a certain amount of time, a certain amount of attendance, or a little of both.
All of the above. Most of what we do is as a result of a need. So it's a need either identified by our educators themselves from the needs assessments and the work that they're doing in the community, or a request would come our way. A community partner may knock on our door and say, we really have the need for ABC. Is this something you can help us with? If we can. But you're absolutely right. If there are arenas and programs, efforts that we've taken off and thought, let's just test the water, you have to realize your time is valuable and there's other issues that you could be working on, and you step away from that.
Likewise, we have to prioritize, too, when we have requests. And does this fit in with our mission, our educational function, or is it something someplace else can do better, or just doesn't fit in with it? We'll
make those. Do you have an example that comes to mind of where you just had to say,
I do too.
I just said
one of the struggles in cooperative extension is that the system staffs a basic similar regardless of population of county. So it's staffed more like the U.S. Senate than the U.S. House. Kind of giving. So we're in a county of 165,000 people. If we were up in like Iron County, where they have like 6,000 people, we might approach the job a little differently. Here, there's always this question of, do you go in depth or do you try and reach more? And so we're constantly struggling with that. One of the programs that I worked with was YouthQuest. You'll see that on the website under Youth Development. When the program first came out, it was a mentoring program where we would go out and recruit executives and other, I'd say, white-collar individuals from like Snap-on and other companies locally, and hook them up with high school students as like a mentoring, tutoring kind of thing. Well, a lot of energy, we wrote grants, a lot of time into it. At the end of the day, we reached like 15 kids. So there's the struggle. So then we took the same information that we distribute to these 15 kids, we package it away on a website. Now I go and do presentations for 60, 70, 80 youth at a time, share the same information, and challenge young people to say, if you want to be an engineer, then you go find some engineers in our community. Here are some tools that you can use and really put it back on that. So always looking at those questions.
And I can give you an example. I am constantly getting requests, can you come and evaluate all my trees? No, I cannot make individual home visits to all of this. You can bring me samples, you can bring us pictures, the master gardeners do a lot of that initial kind of looking at things, but to have to do all of that. We also get a lot of requests for, can the master gardeners come and just take care of our yard or our churches or our, you know.
Perfect.
Well, they're volunteers, they have to get volunteer hours. No, that's all wonderful kinds of things, but their mission is education. So those are some of the things we're constantly balancing.
Okay, facilitating. This is where we're in a position to lead or guide an organizational process with a group. We'll be facilitators at a meeting by leading the meeting. We have done strategic planning efforts for nonprofits and small growing nonprofits. People are starting to get off their feet. And we help build the infrastructure of that organization by board development, volunteer development, you know, giving them the tools and resources to make their organization stronger. Examples of this would be, I'll pass the baton down to Steve to talk about the work that he's just wrapped up.
We've just completed a strategic planning process for the Kenosha Public Museums. Process took about 6 months. It involved 8 separate meetings and basically went through a strategic planning process that has been developed by the university and by the strategic planning team with an extension. It's a tried and true process that is tailored to the individual institution's needs. I was going to talk about this later, but it's fine now. They haven't had a strategic plan since 1998. And since 1999. Since then, they've built 2 very large museums and have been thinking very tactically in a project management kind of mode for over 10 years. Now that they have 3 important facilities with a fairly large attendance, a large budget, and in the middle of an 11 million person market, they want to start thinking strategically. Now that we've got this, what do we do with it? Are we on the right track? Are we organized in, you know, within to provide the services and the product that the public expect? so on and so forth. After all this talking, they came up with two major priorities, two out of seven. One is the structure of the management and the staff needs to be reevaluated and probably changed considerably. The other is that they have to think very hard about their funding sources, what they do with the money, how they justify what they do, programs versus operating, and so forth. Those are, I would say that those are fairly typical priorities for a nonprofit organization, but it helps to have the board and the staff focused on what you really need to do and have an action plan for how you're going to do it, who's going to do it, and by when you're going to do it. And that's the ultimate product that we came up with. And right now they have the draft plan in their hand and they're reviewing that. I'll help them with revision of that, and then it's theirs to implement.
Two other roles would be our program development and evaluation. And through program development, this is where I mentioned the needs assessment. So we will engage in needs assessment activities. We'll study local issues. And as a result, then, we'll develop programs based upon local needs. That's why when I said not every program in this book is going to be in every county, it's because all the needs in communities are not identical and similar. There'll be some nuances and some things we'll find even in Racine County that aren't offered here in Kenosha, and we're pretty closely similar to each other in counties. But youth and governance, and you well know that program, is one of those examples.
Yeah, so in the previous slide, I was doing a presentation on the four developmental assets by Search. Search is a company out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, a nonprofit organization that does community-wide surveys of young people. And when they did the survey here in Kenosha County, they found that a lot of young people didn't feel that they were given useful roles in the community, and they didn't have this connection to the community. So we actually started with another program, Youth as Resources, and then a few county board supervisors, who happens to be in the room, said, you know, maybe we could do something here. And actually modeling it after or inviting other counties in and looking at what they've done for youth and governance program, we were able to locally come up with our own version. And just shared with the chair that Dane County just swore in their folks, I think I mentioned it to the committee last month, but they ran an article and they thanked Kenosha County. They said it was modeled primarily on our model here. So once again, it's not only developing local programs, but then through our network, we share those programs back throughout the state so other counties or other municipalities can benefit from them.
Yeah, and I actually shared that with the county board too, the article that was in there. And the program, we actually went through strategic planning with Annie to get to have the youth and governance program. So we all went out. There were probably, 30 of us that were out at the Nature Center that one night, and we just went through it probably 3 hours.
And then a few follow-up meetings after.
Right, to strategic planning to put the whole program in place.
Good. A very critical part of this process is evaluation. So we are evaluating our local programs. Do we evaluate absolutely everything we do? No, we don't. We try to evaluate those where we absolutely are trying to ask those tough questions. What's the impact? What's the result? What's the outcome? You know, and is it something that we need to report back as a result of what we're doing and the efforts that go forward? So evaluation is extremely important.
With regards to the youth and governance program evaluation, maybe that John answered. One of the things that strikes me, and maybe it happens or maybe it doesn't, is the youth that do sit on our committees, at the end of their role, what is the outcome of their experience? Is there one? How do they relate their experience with others, other than just one-on-one word of mouth? Because we have internships and cooperatives, you know, at our company, and they'll have to give the presentation, okay, of a project they worked on. In this case, hate to give Mark homework, but I'd like to see these guys be able to present back to other students at the end of the cycle. Because otherwise, how are you going to build interest of what your experience was and why it was beneficial or why you did or didn't like it or why you'd recommended things? Hopefully you would recommend it, not, you know, the opposite. But without, and you're not going to do it to a wide, but I know one thing. when I talked to a few of the counselors and deans at some of the high schools, they weren't really aware of the program. And they didn't, so I think if it isn't word of mouth, a lot of students aren't even aware that it's an opportunity for them. I just think that it would require some investment of our youth of that. Okay, what did you get out of it? And it doesn't have to be a 22-page report, but maybe it's a 5 or 10 minute review of what they learned, what they liked, and why they would recommend it. And also, I'm assuming that you guys sit down with all the youth and governments and find out what worked or didn't work for them.
Sure.
Yeah.
And all the county board get that report each year.
Okay.
So it might have just missed.
It may have, yeah.
We measure two things through our evaluation of this particular program. Number one was youth leadership skills. So we do a pre-post-post retrospective evaluation. Basically what we do is we say at the end of the program, reflect back to where you were at the beginning of the program, let us know what your skill level was at, and now at the end of the program, where are your skills now? So it's a lot based on that. The second thing we evaluate, not only youth leadership skills, we also look at this thing called civic engagement, right? So how much of part of the community do you feel? How were you given appropriate roles? Were your opinions asked? And that's really the area that we've seen this explosion between where they started the program and where they're at now. So I don't want to like preload this for you guys, but yeah, so we do that. We do numbers, and then we also ask them open-ended questions. Basically, we just say, what did you get out of the program?
Right.
Now, I totally agree with you, and we struggle, and this committee has the oversight over this program, so it's really exciting. The question always is, how much can we expect of youth and governance members? And if we want them to give a presentation back, I think most gig members say, yeah, we can do that. So I think we can work through that.
I'm recalling, I'm not sure if it's either of your history or civics or U.S. government classes, but I can remember some youth in previous classes who have said that their teachers call on them as a result of them knowing they're in youth and governance and ask them to speak to the students in that class, you know, to say, tell us what... Again, I don't know if it has happened or you've seen it in any of the classrooms that you're in at your schools, but I know I've heard other youth say that.
So. And, you know, and that would be an apropos venue, if you would, because the vast majority of kids are not interested in sitting in county board meetings, let's be honest. But there is a segment that has some interest in politics or maybe future in it, and that's an audience. But, you know, at least you're going from 3 people knowing about it to maybe 20 or 25 people that would maybe spark some interest, you know, in giving them an opportunity to get their name put into the next cycle. But then you've got an outcome, not to turn into a big research, but there's got to be some, because it helps guide our program too.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, and just on that, so the problem with the numbers is that right now we have 40-some youth turning applications. You all will interview probably around 26, 27 for 14 spots. So there is quite a competition. What we haven't seen, what we wanted to see, was this spillover to say, we've got all these great youth that want to be involved. What are other opportunities in the community? Boys and Girls Club, how many youth are on their board? United Way, how many youth are on their board? When do the boards meet? Do they meet during the day, during the business hour? You know, kids are in school. So all those things, that's how we kind of blow it up a little bit bigger, too. And we definitely need everyone to help with that because everyone has different connections.
Did you used to go into schools to explain what it is?
Yes.
And do you still?
Yes. But we have noticed that depending on the school, Supervisor Brunig has gone into schools because, once again, depending on who you know, because schools are really busy, right? Like, oh yeah, John, you know, I go into Tremper High School. I've got this great program for young people. Really? Get in line. We got it. So does somebody know somebody at Tremper? I remember one time we had to get into Central High School, and we actually called the youth and governance member and said, everyone's tried. He's like, I'll do it tomorrow. Boom, went right in, sat down with the principal, and got it done. So yeah, once again, I think it's a team approach. I definitely go in where I have pull, but we always send supervisors in. In fact, we used to do a sign-up sheet where people would pick different schools if they had a connection, and they would go promote the program. Anyway, so.
An additional role is our role as a community connector or community partner. And so this is where we find ourselves building partnerships and community coalitions with a wide diverse network of CBOs. So trivia question of the night, what's a CBO?
County Board Opportunities.
Oh, that's kind of cool. What a good guess. I wish I had a tree, but alas, it's community-based organizations. So community-based organizations are known as CBOs or nonprofits in many cases. And we also collaborate with other county departments and divisions. Now that the sign for the Kenosha Area Chamber of Commerce is up there as a local community-based organization because one of our largest partnerships with the chamber is Leadership Kenosha. That is a program of the chamber of which they've partnered and asked us to take on the educational component of that to deliver the program. So it's a wonderful partnership. They're the fiscal agent, they're the promoters, they give discounts to their chamber members who go through the program. We work with the community to deliver the program, so it's a really nice partnership. Collaborations with other county departments and divisions, we've got numerous ones. I'm going to turn that over to my colleagues.
Who wants to take it?
Go ahead.
I have lots. Parks, facilities. Well, this spring, working on the landscape plan for the courthouse, working with parks, with Kemper. We actually have Master Gardener volunteers. I think I mentioned that volunteer at Kemper, also at Brookside, making more sustainable landscape particularly in a therapeutic kind of landscape we're working in at Brookside. Facilities department requested that I come up with some ideas for the roundabouts that they're now having to put in. What do you put in the middle of those roundabouts without having to mow them every, of course now we're not mowing anything, but mow them every 2 weeks or whatever. So I came up with a list of plants and also not only the plant list, but how they would maintain them and those kinds of things. So that's some of the kinds of things we've done. I've done anyway. Yeah.
One of the former master gardeners at Brookside asked why they were watering the brown lawn. If it's dead, is that going to bring it back to life?
It is not dead. It is perfectly live. And I was actually at Brookside this morning pulling weeds and deadheading. And they are doing that because they have a very large picnic event in August. And apparently the director there wants to make sure that the lawn is in good shape for the picnic.
So when it's brown, it's not dead?
No.
Dormant.
Dormant.
Now you do have to, and I'm sorry, we'll try, you do have to keep them a little bit hydrated so that they don't completely die, but they don't need very much water. If you go on the website, it'll tell you.
And Rick, I think one of the issues that they're having over there is they want to make sure that if anyone smokes and throws their cigarette butt on the ground, it's not going to catch fire. And that's why they're probably moderating it a little bit.
No, that would be terrible.
Now, one other question. Deadheading is a trucker's term. Underhill wouldn't know that one. So what is it?
Okay, I don't know. It's cutting off the dead flowers.
Okay.
So you're going to tell me what the truck is called.
It means empty lawn.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I didn't.
Okay.
Amy, I know we have nutrition educators at workforce development.
Yes. Yeah, that's actually one of the little pieces. We do some nutrition education for at workforce development in a lot of the different programs there. But one of them that we do with W2 program is we do a class called Food Matters. We do it two times a month. Same group of individuals that join us. So far this year, because we're federally funded, we're on the federal fiscal cycle, so we're still in fiscal year 12 until the end of September. But so far this year, we've had 142 people go through that class. 93% of them are females, which is kind of a common thing that we have, but I brought a fun one that we actually have a mixed group. But we talk about different, just healthy eating, you know, concepts, talking to people about how to read labels to make sure they're really getting, you know, kind of the best nutrients for their food dollars. And one of the comments that we had actually after the class in June, a mom came up to her nutrition educator and she said, you know, my son is severely obese. We've gone to a dietitian, And I am reading her quote here. I wanted to bring it so I didn't forget that she learned more about how to look at nutrition labels than I ever did when I talked to the dietitian who works with my son. And we're really, you know, happy to hear that. We don't do prescriptive, you know, medical nutrition therapy, but what we do is the hands-on, how do you understand this? How do you learn about this? How do you use this information to actually help you, you know, in whatever your area is? If you have high blood pressure, now you understand a little more about how to read the label for sodium. If you have high cholesterol, all those different pieces of it. So we kind of, we give you the foundational information that you need to go out and figure that out and research it. So what we really do is that applied education. How do you really understand it? Instead of going to a doctor's office or meeting with a medical professional that tells you, you need to do this, this, and this, and then they leave, and you say, well, I don't know how to do any of those things. So we help a little bit more with kind of the applications-based nutrition education.
Two other departments that we work closely with is planning and development. Kristen Lee, who isn't here this evening, is connected and has been connected to the smart growth planning as the combining the educational component to all the work that they do, so that she helps write their website, their newsletters, getting all that information into the hands of the public. Also spending quite a bit of time on this new bike trail development, all the planning that's been going on to expanding and connecting all the bike trails in Kenosha County. And Division of Parks, I actually facilitated the process for the group that came together to establish the dog parks. They started with, this is our idea, but we don't know where we're going to go and how we're going to get there. So I did the strategic planning process to get to the point where, boy, they're operating, and tonight's the night that they actually dedicated the naming of the new park in Paddock Lake. So yes. How exciting.
Who is the benefactor?
Yeah, we want to, who's the benefactor? What's the name?
Harris, Doc Harris.
Oh, I'm wearing this, Doc Harris.
Yeah, he's been in the village for 20 years.
Yeah.
He said he's...
He's a cat lover?
He owns a
vet. He's a vet. Good. Excellent.
He said it's time to give back something.
That's awesome. That's really awesome.
But, sure.
I just...
I'm done.
I was just going to say, just on the parks thing, so we've had some of our youth groups also plant trees, a lot of trees.
Yes.
We've planted trees up at Pets. We've planted trees out at the new KD area, not in the park, but close to the park, so when those trees grow, they can be moved over to the park. And just a quick funny story, we have a 4-H fishing project that's pretty big and well-organized, and they were on part of the KD Park planning that Teddy was helping facilitate. One of the volunteers was so excited about putting a pier in that they actually had the fundraiser done and ready to go by putting the pier in. It had it all picked out and ready to go. And he was like, let's go. And government doesn't work that fast. So we're still, I think, waiting for the final go-ahead to put the pier in the water. But those are some of the things that our partnerships bring to.
Quickly, I just want to say other big community partners would be Kenosha Unified with all the youth programs that John is engaged with, as well as the Urban Outreach Center. We have a summer camp there this summer, and United Way. Big, big role, and you hear it talked about a lot as you talk to John and Barb, and that is their role as a volunteer developer. We do build capacity of volunteers to implement our programs, and both of those, 4-H and Master Gardeners, do just that. They help extend that knowledge and education to youth through 4-H and with Master Gardeners to the community at large. So through Barb and John's efforts as educators, they're developing the volunteer infrastructure necessary for that program to succeed over time and giving it capacity to have some legs that continue. The legacy of both of those programs is pretty tremendous. So we see that support, mentoring, and training of volunteers critical to the work that we do. We're only a small staff. It's the outreach efforts of our volunteer educators through these programs that really give us increased capacity. We're also keen on our subject knowledge and known as experts in our areas and provide technical resource. So we find ourselves being asked frequently to consult with other municipalities or other groups in a variety of areas. This is also an arena where we have opportunities to work with our state specialists to take that university research and bring it to the county. And I'm going to take the time, John, because it's so cool. So I'm going to cue it up and you talk about it.
Good. So the video you're about to see is a video we created a few years ago to highlight the 4-H Gateway Academy. And this was an engineering camp
locally. Yeah, very exciting stuff. The design was that there's some Project Lead the Way, which is a national curriculum, engineering curriculum, computer-based. It's been juried, great stuff. The problem is they couldn't get the classroom time to always get youth engaged in this. And so we had a state specialist who wrote a grant to Kern to say, let's work with Cooperative Extension in the schools to see if we can get this implemented. So that's what we did. This particular state specialist worked with me locally. We went and partnered with K-Tech, which is the old Lincoln Elementary School. So it's the Kenosha Technology Enhanced Curriculum School, K-8. And the reason why we work there is because, well, number one, they're technology, but number two, they're the pipeline to Lakeview Technical High School, Technical Academy. And so what we wanted to do is offer this to kids that were coming there that were transferring into K-Tech as like a get you up to speed program, and then also for any students starting at Lakeview who didn't have this engineering background. So those were the target students. We've been doing this camp now for, this will be its fourth year, and here it is.
According to worldwide rankings, the United States is falling behind in science, technology, and education.
Is it playing?
Play.
Gateway Academy is a one-week program where kids gain team-building skills and do hands-on projects that revolve around math and science. The purpose of the program is to spark students' interest in technology, which would influence their future career choice.
It really involves you and teaches you how to interact with the computers and how to work with other people, because they make different groups a lot of times. You know, they switch you around all the time, so you know, they're the same person.
I like building solar cars.
Solar cars, what have you learned about solar cars?
Well, I know that they just use energy from the sun, so obviously they don't work when it's raining.
Okay, yes, that's pretty good. What's another project?
I like building like little shelters out of newspaper.
Explain it a little bit.
What we have to do is, you're going to pack up a newspaper and a roll of tape, and we have to pretend that we were lost in the desert, and we had to build a shelter out of the newspaper to protect us from the sun and the wind and the sand.
What's your favorite project so far?
The robot car joystick thing. It's awesome.
Well, explain that a little bit.
What is that? Well, you had to construct the car, then you had to program it, and make sure everything works on it, and you have to fix it, build the wires, and you have to connect it to a joystick, and then you can control it, and in the end, you have a sumo competition, where you're trying to push the other one out of the ring, so it's like battle over control.
Side note, so we had a couple of AmeriCorps Vista members shoot this video, and they thought they'd put some Indiana Jones music to it, probably recognize it. So we got it all done, burned it, everything. They saw the video and wanted to use it at the National 4-H meeting, but they found out that we didn't get copyright permission from George Lucas to use the soundtrack, so it's only been shown locally. It's just like, we learned a valuable lesson in copyright. Thank you. So once again, just real quick, state specialist writes this massive grant, gets a pool of money, in this case from the Kern Family Foundation, to do this project. I contact them, say, how can we get involved? We make the connections locally, the money comes in locally to set up the grant. So, and that one, then going again this year, last week in July, first week in August at K-Tech, they're offering a camping and stuff.
Another very important role that we have is that of scholar and researcher. And we do get engaged in some community-based research. Right now, we are working with our state specialist, Dave Marcoulier, to do an economic impact analysis of Country Thunder. Again, that was at the request of the county board. So we've got surveys ready to go that will be electronically transmitted through Country Thunder's email addresses for people who attend the event in the next couple of weeks. They sweetened the pot. I just can't say enough good about how wonderful the promoters are for this event here in Kenosha County to support this effort. In order to encourage people to fill out the survey, because who wants to do that? They just happen to have an autographed guitar that they're going to put up for the person for as a random drawing. And I think last year it was, or he said that when they didn't do it here locally, they did it at another venue. I think it was, do you remember what it was? Dave or Steve or Chris, I think it was like a Toby Keith, you know, somebody, like a name I might even recognize, and I'm not a country and western fan. So anyway, other community research we've done, we did the evaluation for the county board to look at the committee structure. Rose has been engaged in one a lot larger regionally around, and that's why the picture of the farmer's market is there, because they did survey research for local farmer market managers to learn more about the breadth and depth of what they can do to improve efforts for farmers markets in Wisconsin. About 5 years ago, or even longer, we did a hunger prevention survey with Kenosha Unified to look at hunger and food security issues with our families in Kenosha Unified. And Annie and Steve Deller, another state specialist, did a impact analysis of the closing of Chrysler about 5 years ago. So these are some of the efforts we've gotten involved in as community-based research. Lastly, for us personally, it's important that we engage in our own learning, and that means this lifelong concept of professional development. So we try very hard to engage and infuse opportunities for educators so that they stay up to date in their areas and are engaged in the latest and greatest in those arenas so that as we're delivering that information, it's current. We are all about the university research, so things that you might read on websites or blogs on anything from what might make you lose weight to what's going to make my tomatoes redder, all those are not pieces of information you will find in the venues of UW Extension, because we do pride ourselves. That's the part that makes us unique. It's a niche that we have, is that we have access to university research, and we will only disseminate information that we know is research-based. So that's a really key piece. These are just some examples of photos and pictures of us in various variety of venues doing a lot of variety of teaching in a lot of different settings. So as I said at the beginning, we are educators. We teach in a wide arena with a wide variety of audiences, hopefully with some great community outcomes and successes. That's the goal. That's the goal.
Thank you, Candace. Any other questions? Okay. Are we doing educator update?
We are not. They ran away. I took all their time. So unless they have something very quick.
We gave you updates. We told you what we're doing.
Okay. I would just say, please let us know how we can be an educational resource for you or your constituents in any way. I mean, there's all kinds of networks and associations that you're a part of, that we could use you as becoming part of that network of octopus of arms to stretch out for us. We would welcome that, and I mean, love to have that opportunity. So,
well, the next time those youth are planting trees, they can certainly come to my house and do some in the backyard. Throw that out. We have some trees that need to be planted. So, okay.
What was there a reason you couldn't plant them in, Katie?
I don't think they were ready for them yet. They weren't.
It was like a nurse. We're almost becoming an in-house nurse.
Yeah, it was the Parks Department. They had some 500 or 600 trees that needed to be planted in the ground in 3 days. So they were like, "Hey, got any help?" I said, "Sure do."
So we had a couple 4-H clubs go out for the whole weekend and assisted the grounds crew, and they learned how to plant the trees and things like that. And so it was a really good learning environment.
Okay, anything else? All right, that concludes this portion of our meeting. We will adjourn to the other side. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.